about comics.
So take your seats, please. We'll go ahead and get started with tonight's committee meeting. But you. Stephanie, what's the other day? May, March. Are they together? Or? Okay. Members, this evening we have a number of bills that are in front of the Commerce Committee, and the first bill that we have is HF 2251. Representative Anderson, would you like to begin and move your bill this evening for the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members. I would like to move House File 2251 to pass and then be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Moving on. Just checking to see if members, it's been a long day for members and for your temporary chair as well. So with that, we'll ask you to go ahead and proceed, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 2251 transfers the regulatory authority over the HMOs from the Department of Health to the Department of Commerce. By doing this, the oversight of the HMOs will be just in one agency. The Department of Commerce regulates all insurance carriers in Minnesota. When the HMO statutes were enacted in the 1970s, the decision was made to require them to be regulated by the Minnesota Department of Health because this was a new way of providing health coverage. Since then, the market has changed, and today the Department of Health has a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Commerce to regulate all of the financials for the Department of Health. Currently, the regulatory system is fragmented with regulators in three different state agencies. This bill will achieve administrative efficiencies by locating all regulators in one agency. The idea of transferring the regulatory authority of HMOs from the Commissioner of Health to the Commissioner of Commerce has been around for 10 to 15 years. Passage of this bill will also help consumers by locating the regulator in one place, not multiple places. Right now, consumers have to figure out which agency to contact. It makes sense to simplify the regulatory structure by locating it in a single state agency. And I'm open for questions.
Any questions for the author on the bill before we take her witnesses this evening?
She's just here to answer questions
okay.
as well.
So. For the record, did you want to go ahead and introduce yourself in case there are questions this evening?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Nelson from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans and just here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions from the committee for the author of the bill or her witness this evening? Seeing no questions from the committee, is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against this bill this evening that's before the Commerce Committee? 2251. Seeing no one. And Representative Anderson, did you want to renew your motion?
Yes. Well, thank you, committee members. I would like to renew my motion for House File 2251 to be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries.
No.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. The next bill that we have before us this evening is House File 2500 on debt settlements. And Representative Sanders will be taking the testifying table shortly to discuss that bill with us.
Are you sure it's the same bill?
While we're waiting for Representative Sanders to come to the testifying table and begin, Representative Mullery, have you had a chance to look over the minutes, bro? Could you take a quick gander at the minutes from the meeting of February 29th and February 6th? The minutes have been moved from the February 29th and the March 6th meeting of the Commerce and Regulatory Reform Committee. Are there any corrections or deletions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Representative Sanders, welcome back to your committee. And go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and move your bill if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sanders.
And I would move House File 2500 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. Members, this bill is a bill that deals with debt settlement. It is, in general, it is federal conformity with the new FTC rule under the Obama administration, and adds quite a bit of new consumer protections during the debt settlement process. With me today is Mr. Wesley Young and Mr. Doug Franzen. And if it's okay with you, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn things over to Mr. Young to go through the more technical aspects of the bill.
Mr. Young, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Honorable Committee. My name is Wesley Young. I'm here on behalf of the American Fair Credit Council. We are a trade association for debt settlement companies. We've worked the last few years in a number of states to pass regulation that's fair for the industry and good for consumers. Just last year alone, there were four states, Texas, Maryland, Colorado, and Missouri, that passed language very similar to what we have in House File 2500. Just a little bit of background of exactly what we do. Debt settlement is one niche in the debt relief industry. We only deal with unsecured debt. 95% of what we deal with is credit card debt. And the main difference between us and other debt relief agencies is that we strive to get a reduction in principal itself, not just in interest. I think one of the misconceptions about consumers in our program is that they are low income, which is actually not the case. In order for consumers to need our assistance, generally they've had significant income to get enough credit to get themselves in trouble to need our services. So the average household income, according to one of our members who keeps track of the demographic statistics, is that consumers in our programs average about $72,000 in income a year. 60% of them have at least some college education. So just to give you an idea as to who's in our programs. We're very successful at what we do. Our members alone in 2009 and 2010 each year settled about $1 billion worth of debt. So it definitely works. Now, there was a big change in our industry in 2010, which is after Minnesota passed the law that regulates us. And that is that the FTC passed a rule that provides significant consumer protections. The rule has disclosure requirements, has some mandatory things that we have to do, but the main thing that it changed for us is the manner in which we may collect our fees. The FTC rule banned advance fees. In other words, we may not charge a fee to a consumer until we get a result that the consumer accepts. So in the process, what would happen is a consumer would shop around, they'd find a company that they liked, negotiate terms that they like, and they'd have to sign a written agreement that contained what the fee would be, how it would be charged. But the consumer still doesn't pay fees at that point in time. Then we start performing the services. We provide financial education. We provide client support and service, review lots of documents on their behalf, and then we negotiate with the creditors. And it's not until we are successful in negotiating a settlement that we can bring to the consumer and that the consumer accepts and authorizes and makes a payment on, only at that point in time are we allowed to charge a fee. If we bring a settlement offer that the consumer doesn't like, the consumer can reject that settlement offer and not pay us a dime. The other thing is that our contracts are at will. So the consumers not only can reject any settlements, but they can terminate the contract with us at any time. It can terminate after we've done one settlement, two settlements. It can terminate with an offer on the table. They can walk away and not owe us anything other than what we've earned by settlements that they've accepted. So this is an extremely strong consumer protection. It's the reason and the need for House File 2500 is that Minnesota law, as passed in 2009, is actually inconsistent with the FTC law. Under Minnesota law, we can actually charge advance fees. We can charge a setup fee. We can charge monthly fees. So this change, this amendment, will actually strengthen Minnesota law as exists today in terms of consumer protection. So we believe it's good for Minnesota consumers. In addition, I know that the amendment only deals with the fee issue, but I think it's important to note that the existing statute provides a lot of other consumer protections, including licensing, bonding, mandatory disclosures, lots of requirements for us as companies to abide by, prohibitions, and enforcement. So we just ask for your vote for House File 2500. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Members, any questions for Mr. Young? Seeing none, we'll move, as Representative Sanders had asked us, to Mr. Franz for his testimony.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Doug Franzen. I'm here on behalf of the American Financial Credit Council. And I can echo everything that Mr. Young has said. The one piece I would add is that the effort to regulate debt settlement in 2009 simply is not working in Minnesota. The industry has dried up, and we believe that's to the great detriment of Minnesota consumers and Minnesota debtors. I think that's one reason the industry is willing to come forward with the FTC proposal, which was thoroughly vetted and gone through the entire regulatory process at the federal level with all citizens having input. This language, I believe, is verbatim. It mirrors the federal rule exactly. And the key to this is 100% of the transactional risk is borne by my clients, the debt settlers. It is a no-risk proposition for the consumer. If we can help them, they take the deal. If we don't offer an attractive deal, they walk away. It's that simple. And we believe that we can conduct business here in Minnesota, bring back the jobs that were lost, and move forward and assist Minnesota consumers with the enactment of this legislation. The other thing I've said is we've had ongoing discussions, very fruitful discussions, with, I believe, your next witness. And we are always willing to continue those. We've made some great progress, I think. Not to use his words, we're 90%+ there. And we think we're 100% there, but even as we move through the process with this, if we're fortunate enough to pass the bill tonight, we will keep working with Mr. Elwood and move forward to get the best law that Minnesota can possibly have.
Thank you, Mr. Franzen. Members, questions for Mr. Franzen on his testimony before the committee today? Seeing none and hearing none, is there anyone who would like to, from the audience, speak for or against the bill this evening? Mr. Elwood, you'll approach the table, please. Good evening, Mr. Elwood. Welcome to the committee. And if you'd state your name for the record and then begin with your testimony.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. And first I want to thank the author, Representative Sanders, and the proponents for being very open and really willing to try to get to a place where this bill and this entire industry can operate here in Minnesota, but still assure us that we've got adequate consumer protections. Just a quick couple of words. First of all, I just want to point out that the FTC, in fact, of course, as Mr. Franz and Mr. Young mentioned, did pass a rule, but it is somewhat narrow. And of course, state law can always go beyond and be more protective. And at this point, I think Minnesota has some important protections that may be at risk. So the question really and the concern for us is whether absolutely no parameters on fees whatsoever is or is not in the public interest then. And that's what we're trying to sort out. And I would echo the comments that Mr. Franzen made, that we are working very hard to figure out the right balance here. And so we appreciate the opportunity to keep working on that, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. Members, questions for Mr. Elwood on his testimony this evening? Seeing none and hearing none, is there anyone else who'd like to testify for or against it? Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Elwood. I guess I don't quite understand. It sounds like there's a lot of problems with the bill right now, but do you think you can wave some wands and figure out how to make them go away? Is there any other stops before the floor? Or, in other words, it would seem that someplace in committee, if there's not an agreement, it should be thoroughly discussed. And I don't know where else it would be other than the floor, which isn't the best place.
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mullery, where the bill goes from here is not my call. But all I can say is that, you know, when you work with folks who are other side of the bill and you get the sense that there's a sincerity to try to work something out, I mean, I just have a feeling, you know, that level of trust. And ultimately, if the bill isn't, it gets to a place where we don't think it's ready for prime time, and that's where it goes, and then that's where the discussion would happen. The question really becomes, right now we have some parameters around what fees can be charged. And the proponents, while we appreciate the fact that they're willing to go with the no fees up front rule, the question that we need to answer is absolutely no parameter around fees. Where's the balance? Is that a correct balance? And frankly, we're, you know, the arguments, got some new arguments today and trying to digest those and speak with the folks that I work with around the country on this stuff and just trying to come to the right answer and to be fair to the industry, but to be, and I think you know me well enough to know that, you know, my first interest is always to make sure that consumers are adequately protected. So it's just, I'm just dancing as fast as I can.
Representative Mullery, follow up.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess it's going to pass anyhow. I just don't think. I think it probably should be. Is this something that could be done by the first deadlines or something? I mean, I just don't. This is a complicated thing. If we get into a big fight on the floor, nobody's going to have a clue. Whereas in committee, they kind of have an idea. But. If it was going to another committee, maybe that would help, but I don't know if it is.
Representative Sanders?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mullery, you know, I, as always, I've given my word to Mr. Elwood that we will continue to try and negotiate. We think the bill is good as it is. Mr. Elwood does have some additional concerns, and one of the reasons we feel strongly about the bill as is because it is complying with federal FTC rule from the Obama administration. We believe in the consumer protections that are in that FTC rule. There are no fee caps in that rule as a federal rule. So we will continue to see if there is something that we can work out with Mr. Elwood. And we'll continue to have those conversations. And the door is always open to him and other proponents. Again, we feel good about the direction that the bill is going at this point in time.
Representative Mullery. No further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
And to piggyback a little bit on Representative Mullery's concern, and I think the concern raised by Mr. Elwood, is this is, on its face, something of a step backwards versus what Minnesota law currently provides. The fact that the parties and both have stopped by my office, I think they are working very diligently, literally even before this meeting. I think they were visiting yet again. So I know that they're talking. Sometimes, you know, people come up, they say, we'll keep working on it. You don't really know if they're talking or not. These folks really are, and I think they are very given their best efforts to try to work something out. I also think that they get that if it gets to the floor and something hasn't been figured out, it's going to be a storm, and that wouldn't, we don't have, you know, the product that comes out of a storm like that is not a good one. So we got a good author, we've got good parties engaged, and I'm hopeful that something will come to the floor and everybody will be kumbaya and we'll have a little sing-along, because if not, we will have that storm. So with that No singing? All right. So no singing. We'll mow the words to Kumbaya. But I believe it's worth letting it move forward and letting the gentleman continue to work it through.
Representative Atkins will be forewarned that we should buy hazard insurance for this one.
I would.
Anyone else? Questions for Representative Sanders or the testifiers? If not, Representative Sanders renews his motion that House File 2500 be passed and moved to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. We are going to go just a little out of the printed order on the agenda this evening because we have two bills that deal with debt settlement issues and debt management. And so we'll take House File 2569 right now, Representative Mazerol. Representative Mazerol, would you like to move House File 2969 for consideration this evening?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I move House File 2569 to pass and be referred to the General Register.
Proceed.
And Mr. Chair, I also have a proposed amendment. It's the DE1 amendment, which should be in your packets, and I would move that amendment as well.
Members, as Representative Mazerol has said, there is a DE1 amendment in your packets this evening that provides some updated language, and it is Representative Mazerol's request to amend the bill with the DE1 amendment. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Proceed, Representative Mazerol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2569 is a bill that also relates to providers of debt settlement services and, in addition, those providers of debt management services. Current law exempts attorneys at law from the provisions of the oversight of these activities, as well as some other professionals. What this bill is intended to do is limit the activity that attorneys at law may do and still be exempted by this provision. Right now, it's broadly attorneys at law. 2569 would propose to exempt attorneys only if they're doing this as an ancillary matter to their primary scope of business. And the purpose of the DE1 amendment was just to further clarify that if they're doing, for instance, they may be doing a debt settlement or debt management service for an individual client, whereas the primary their primary business is other areas of the law, other than debt settlement or debt management. So, in fact, it's intended to limit the exemption. And I have with me Mr. Ron Elwood to kind of give some background as to why this may be necessary.
Thank you, Representative Mazerol. Welcome back to the committee again, Mr. Elwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Ron Elwood, Legal Aid. And thank you, Representative Mazerol and the other co-authors of this bipartisan bill that have signed on. When we passed the bill, when you passed the bill a couple years ago, the language we all thought said that if you were kind of in the business of debt settlement, even if you're an attorney or any of the other exemptions, you still had to register with the Department of Commerce and follow the law. But if you really weren't in that business but were just doing it as a secondary thing, as part of something else like winding up a corporation or partnership, well, of course, you wouldn't have to register and follow all those rules. The problem that has arisen and the reason that we're here today is because the Department of Commerce, Attorney General, Lutheran Social Services, and people that deal with the debt and legal aid that deal with people in debt and having trouble have identified a pattern of, and I want to emphasize, out-of-state attorneys. There's not a single Minnesota attorney who has argued that they shouldn't do the right thing. Several of these out-of-state attorneys are arguing that no, there isn't a qualified exemption. There's an absolute exemption, and there's no, under no circumstances, that they have to follow the law. So what Representative Mazerol's bill does is make it crystal clear that if you're in the business, you got to follow the law. But if you're just doing it as an ancillary matter, you don't. So this is just clarifying existing law, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Underwood. Any questions Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mazdral, or whoever you are, I was looking at the witness there, and I'm wondering what you did with the real Representative Mazdral, that you have your witness as legal aid up there.
Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, I always enjoy working with my friend Ryan Elwood, whether it be for or against.
Did you wish to follow up on that? I didn't think so, but I thought it would offer you the opportunity.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Elwood?
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank you for that.
Boy, can you feel the love in the room tonight? Members, any other questions for Mr. Elwood or the author on the bill? Anyone else wishing to testify on the matter for or against? Mr. Franzen.
Mr. Chairman, members, Doug Franzen again representing AFCC. While we haven't had an opportunity to negotiate this bill with Mr. Elwood, it is our opinion that it's a good bill, and we recommend you pass it.
The love keeps rolling tonight. Anyone else wishing to testify for or against the bill or any other questions for Mr. Franzen? If not, Representative Mazdral renews his motion that House File 2569 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries. Thank you. We also have two other bills this evening that are liquor-related bills. The next one that we will take is Representative Kiefer's bill, 2459. 2459. Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 2459 be considered for possible inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill. And I'm generally opposed to barriers for more and more licensing, but this is necessary based on our Minnesota state liquor laws. So this is just creating a new licensure for a new kind of entrepreneurial business. This is for wine educators. And I have a wine Mr. Chair, I have a couple of amendments.
Okay, did you want to handle those at this time?
Yes.
There was an A2 and an A3 amendment.
Yes.
Would you like to move one or both of those?
I would like to move both. Do I need to do that separately?
Yes, we'll do them separately. Should we start with your A2 amendment first?
Sure.
Okay.
I'd like to move that the A2 amendment be accepted.
There's an author's amendment in the form of the A2 amendment to the Bill 2459. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye. Those opposed? And then the A3 amendment as well, Representative?
Yes, please. I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
All right. Representative Kiefer asks that the A3 amendment be considered to House File 2459. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill is in the form the author's like. Go ahead and proceed, Representative
Kiefer. Thank you,
Kiefer.
Mr. Chair. I have a wine educator here if there's any questions. Otherwise, you know, with these two liquor bills coming up, maybe everyone's got happy hour in their mind right now. So,
members, questions for Representative Kiefer or her witness this evening? Maybe we should have meetings later in the evening. It seems like we do much better getting through the agenda. I'm sorry, Representative Slocum, I didn't see you over there. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Chair, you're just being too funny tonight.
Trying anyhow. Anyway, nowhere as much as our regular chair, though.
So is my colleague on the side of me over here. On a serious note, Representative Kiefer, I get a teaching license for 5 years for $60. $250 seems kind of steep. Can you give me the reasoning behind the $250 mark for a wine license?
Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this point, I'd like to ask our wine educator, because she was kind of the one that set that right and has some reasoning behind it.
Would the wine educator please step to the mic and identify herself?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Jennifer Chu, and I own Angel Share Wine Partners. I've been in the wine business 11 years and on my own business for full-time for a year. The reason that we set the fee at $250 is because we really want to weed out anyone who's not serious about wine, since this is involving alcohol and it is a sensitive issue. We want to make sure that only serious and educated people are actually out there representing this part of the industry per se. So that's why we chose $250. I actually personally wanted higher, but I did get a group of wine educators, some of which are here today as well, and $250 is what we agreed on as a group.
Representative Slocum, follow-up? Okay. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I like this bill. I think it's a good idea. I'm just, maybe we should have our wine tasting expert give us kind of a thumbnail sketch for those that don't know exactly what her business entails and why we want to do this.
Thank you. Proceed.
Yes. Well, my business, my forte is wine etiquette, as I call it. And so I work with businesses and organizations, and some of which, you know, host, of course, at a restaurant. But what I've found and where I've run into why creating this bill is a lot of professionals, such as the industry of insurance and, you know, let's say orthodontists or these types of people, they want to have customer appreciation or client attraction events at their place of business, because they actually want people to come to their business. And so a lot of them are actually already doing customer appreciation parties in particular without having a professional there. So they're basically opening up their office for open bar and, you know, really kind of endangering themselves, if you will. And so really what I think this bill is doing is two things. One is it's, you know, giving us a license and being able to do this as a business, because wine education is very popular, and all of us here would definitely like to do this as a business and be successful and profitable. And number two, it's actually kind of a service, because we are probably helping out with, you know, the consumption level, since we have limits of 5 ounces per hour, in essence. We're actually there to monitor how much these people are drinking, and we're providing entertainment and a fun atmosphere, and they're learning a soft skill as far as how to drink wine, how to taste, how to order. That helps them with businesses. I mean, that's with my business, that's how I approach it.
Thank you, Ms. Chu. Mm-hmm. Anyone else, questions from the committee for Ms. Chu or Representative Atkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate, and I guess it's section 4, item 4 of the bill, that Joe Atkins and, you know, people like me wouldn't be able to just walk in and consider ourselves a wine educator. It looks like it's very significant training and tips training in addition. I was looking for the reference relative to dram shop issues and how you handle that. Is there coverage? You have to purchase dram shop coverage, or what do you do?
Ms. Chu?
Yes, that's something I've been working on, and as far as when the bill was originally written, I was told that the reason it's not actually on the bill is because of whatever subsection it comes under, dram shop is required, and so we've been working with MLBA. I know as far as with the other educators, most wine educators right now do this part-time. There's myself and one other woman who this is our business. But the ones who do it part-time in particular are, you know, concerned about the cost of dram shop, because the minimum is about $2,000 a year. So I would say, you know, I don't know if you want to say that's still in progress, but originally when the bill was written, I was told that it's basically already required.
Representative Atkins, follow up?
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's, as I understand it, the bill's going to be laid over for possible inclusion. That's probably an issue that should be wrestled to the ground before it, and I think we got some time, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But I find it a very intriguing idea, and it sounds like a neat thing that you do. I just want to, for your own sake and the people that you have with you,
yes,
that there is some sort of coverage in the event of an accident or something that happens, for not just for the injured people, but for the protection of the people that might want to operate under this, mm-hmm, legislation.
Absolutely.
So, Ms. Chu?
And as far as right now, personally, what I have is I have a $2 million general liability policy, and in my policy there is a host liquor liability built in, and so my insurance broker, who couldn't be here tonight but who has been advising me on this, said as far as 4 tastings, what I'm doing right now, that covers me in the event that there is something that happens. Yeah. But yes, liability is definitely always a top concern.
And I think,
Mr. Chairman, the challenges under the standard commercial policy will not provide that coverage. In fact, it's generally an exclusion that is set forth. I think it's called ISO or something, the Insurance Services Organization that puts together boilerplate insurance coverage. You may have it, and I applaud you for doing that, and it's a smart thing, obviously, to do anytime you're in a industry like that. But what I would be concerned about is somebody that has a commercial policy that thinks that they're covered, and in fact on page 9, and most commercial policies will have that exclusion somewhere in their policy. And the last thing we want to do is send people off to do this. Mm-hmm. And it takes one accident, and it's their own, you know, somebody's coming after their own personal assets at that point.
Right.
And I'm sure that's not what you're intending either. So as long as, you know, once we figure out that issue, I think it looks like a very intriguing thing that would be a good addition, perhaps, to the liquor omnibus bill. Thank you again for Mr.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, our wine educator, I'm intrigued by the business model. Maybe you could just clarify for me, because we got the amendments. I'm trying to fit it all in here. The business model, you're paid a fee by the corporation, really for the education experience, or is there really no sale? Is that where your bottom dollar comes from, or is there, are they paying for the wine or the experience?
Ms. Chu, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, right now they are required to buy the wine separately, and then I come in and they basically pay me. It would be like a professional speaking fee.
Representative Rude, any follow-ups? Okay. Anyone else? Questions for the author and the testifier. Otherwise, are there others who'd like to speak for or against the bill this evening? There we go. You go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli with McGranche Law Firm on behalf of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association and the Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association. We've been talking with Ms. Chu for the last couple weeks about this bill, and this bill represents the only similar kind of licensure to this, where you have a wine provided to people on sale is a caterer's license, and caterer's licenses have a home base where they're based out of, and they're regulated by the municipality, meaning a restaurant or something. So this is sort of in that theme or in that concept, but it's just different and distinct. I would say that Ms. Chu has is clearly familiar with the industry, clearly has a lot of background in this, has gone to great lengths to try to ameliorate the concerns that we have about this, and really, frankly, has done a good job. The bar is set high. There are serious people that are, this will be only essentially allowing serious people to do it. We think that the fact that dram shop insurance is required is significant and important, as well as the amendments that have been adopted. So it was sort of not a statement or for or against, just a statement of we have some concerns, and I just want to recognize that she's certainly tried to address them.
Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Is there anyone who wishes to, Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bagnoli, I was curious about your opinion on the matter if these wine experts should be able to only teach people that are wealthy and in suites, or should they be able to teach everybody?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, I have no point of view on that particular issue.
You're rather elitist?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, my lack of opinion I don't think should be characterized as one way or the other on that provision. I know you have a strong point of view on all things at the university, and we don't.
Mr. Bagnoli.
for those who don't aren't regular watchers, there are subplots that do go through here, and you just witnessed one of those in our committee here this evening. So, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know, I'm not sure if this is to Mr. Bagnoli, but I'll start with you because you may know the answer to this question. So in my local liquor stores, which happen to be municipal, but they will do wine tastings when you're in the store shopping.
Yeah.
And you can ask questions of the person pouring. Will that person have to be licensed as an employee of the liquor store to be able to do this and talk to people about wine?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bagnoli, the distinction is that's at a has a liquor license. This is allowing a wine educator or someone with this license to go to a place that doesn't normally have a liquor license, like a corporate boardroom or elsewhere, and serve wine. Right now, you can only serve wine at a place with a liquor license. If you're allowed to serve a little bit of wine or beer or spirits at a liquor store, or obviously at a bar or restaurant. Under a caterer's license, to get a caterer's license, you have to have 25 or more seating capacity, and you can have a catering license, and then you have the ability to go and essentially have a mobile on-sale license as well, and that's what Ms. Chu is looking to have as well.
Representative Lone.
Did I answer it?
Well, that's helpful, but I think, right. And I'm not sure if I'm looking at this issue properly, but I think I see it as two separate things. One is the liquor license and that and the setting where you're pouring, and the other is more the educator point of it, and is that person licensed and has some of the qualifications that are outlined in the bill, and I see that as kind of a second issue along with this that's encompassed in that. Am I reading this incorrectly?
Mr. Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, there is the wine educator, but the place where it gets into this committee, you could be a wine educator right now and go to a corporate boardroom and not be licensed. Ms. Chu can go out. It's when she wants to serve alcohol, and probably a critical aspect to educating people about wine is serving the alcohol. And serving the alcohol for money, that's why we're in this committee. To be a wine educator, for all I know, there's a class at the University of Minnesota on it right now where you can take it where they don't serve alcohol.
Representative Loon.
Okay. So I think I think I understand what you're saying, but what I'm hearing though is that if you have a liquor license, so if you own a bar or if you own a liquor store and you're pouring samples, you don't have to necessarily have a wine educator background to pour wine and talk to people about it. However, if you are someone going to a place that does not have a liquor license and you're going to pour and talk about wine, you do have to have this educator background and license. So that's
Bagnoli.
Issue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, that's how it's been presented here today, yes. That's Ms. Chu's idea. Okay. The only other way to do it, it would be a caterer can, and they don't have a wine educating license, they can go and serve all they want.
Okay.
Representative Loon?
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure I was clear, so thanks. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, Representative Kiefer, if you know where the fees would go, you know, where does that get deposited?
Representative Kiefer.
I believe it's through the Commission of Public Safety. Commissioner of Public Safety. So I don't know where those fees go. That's where the license would be.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Kiefer. So you don't know if those are going to the general fund or, and do we know if there's a cost associated with monitoring this or, and how that's going to be handled at all, or if you've had a fiscal note on this at all?
Mr. Bagnoli, you do have some experience in the industry. Could you maybe speak to that for us? Not putting you on the spot, just drawing on your expertise.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe, and the department is up in the corner there, I believe that this would be one of the very few, if not the only, license issued by the commissioner, my guess it would be unlike at least a retail license issued by the commissioner. I know for the wholesalers and actually for the buyer's cards that our retailers get, we make the check out to DPS, but I think it goes to general fund. I don't think there's a special account set up.
As Mr. Magnoli pointed out, we do have representatives from the department. Is someone from the department able to speak directly to that question? If so, we'd appreciate hearing from you this evening. We'd have someone making their way to the testifying table, so if we'll just hold until that individual can get here. Good evening and welcome to the committee. If you can identify yourself for the record and begin with your testimony.
My name is Jim Arnold. I'm a senior special agent at the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Along with me is Director Michelle Tuckner.
The question I think that was before us is, what happens to the $250 if you know?
All of the license fees that we bring in, unless it's designated to a special revenue account controlled by the division for the activities, go into the general fund.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, that was your question. Okay, thank you. Any other questions or anyone else wishing to speak for or against the bill this evening? Seeing none and hearing none, I will lay House File 2459 as amended over for possible inclusion in the liquor bill. Thank you, Representative Kiefer. This will bring us to our final bill this evening. It's also another liquor bill, and Representative Hoppe, the chair of the committee, will be approaching the testifying table to talk about House File 2432. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and we are House File 2432 is the growler bill, and we understand that this bill is something that is still being worked on. We are going to lay this bill over, but we did want to start having public testimony for and against it tonight. And with that, we'll start. We'll bring Mr. Bagnoli back up.
Before, as he's making his way down, did you want to?
I will move House File 2432.
Mr. Magnoli, welcome back to the committee.
We have, Mr. Chair, we have a couple of other guests coming up at the same time to help Mr. Magnoli out.
And we'll start with Mr. Magnoli first, or then he can go ahead and introduce who he has brought along with him.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Joe Magnoli on behalf of MLBA and Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association. I have here with me tonight Tom Agnes, who is the store manager of the Brooklyn Center Liquor Store, a municipal liquor store, and Jennifer Schoenzeit with Zips Liquor in Minneapolis. And this is a bill that we introduced. It's out of a desire to help small brewers in Minnesota to better able get their product to market. Many small brewers in Minnesota don't have bottling and canning abilities. They only have the ability to keg beer. When they keg beer, usually what they do is they keg the beer and they bring it to bars and restaurants for sale. And that's really the only way that they can distribute their beer. They're also allowed to sell growlers if these are breweries that are under 3,500 barrels, are allowed to sell their beer, 500 barrels of which they can sell as growlers in their brewery. So if someone comes to their brewery, they can sell their growler. Often, unfortunately, the breweries are located in cheap industrial space where to lure people to get there sometimes is not as easy as we would all like. This would allow them to sell a keg to a liquor store, the liquor store to fill the growler at the liquor store, seal it, and sell it there. It provides another outlet for small breweries to get their beer to market. Obviously, there's some. This is beneficial to liquor stores that have a market for small batch or specialty batch craft brewing. As you all may or may not be aware, craft brewing is an exploding area of growth in the beer market. It's the only, the big breweries are in somewhat decline in terms of their growth, but small batch brew or small craft brewing is growing leaps and bounds. In Minnesota, we're at the, I would almost say the epicenter in the nation of this, and we're trying to keep it going, keep that sort of currents, keep keep going. We have a couple of brewers here with us tonight, small brewers, and this is an idea that I would say is conceptually what we are trying to achieve. There are a lot of details that we have yet to work out. I can tell you that large brewers have concerns, and small brewers and mid-sized brewers, about the amount of money that they've invested in their brand, that somehow their brand doesn't get hurt or diminished in any sort of way. Beer wholesalers have some concerns how this might go forward. Liquor stores and bars have some concerns. I know that Department of AGED, Alcohol Gambling Enforcement, has concerns. Department of Health has concerns. We've got a number of items that we need to touch and scratch off before we get this thing, I think, fully cooked. But we're here to tell you about it and hopefully come back sometime later when it's fully cooked. With that, I get, again, Jennifer and Tom to talk more about their business and growlers.
Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Tom, Jennifer, who would like to go first? Please identify yourself for the record and begin with your testimony, sir.
All right, Mr. Chairman, representatives, thanks for having us. My name is Tom Agnes. I've been in the beer business just about 25 years. I run a municipal liquor operation in the city of Brooklyn Center, several stores there. This is an idea that both me and Jennifer have been thinking about for several years now. The craft beer industry is, like Joe said, exploding right now. There's a lot of really fun stuff out there. And what I love about the growler movement is it's known for having really fresh beer. You go to a brewery or a brew pub, you get a growler, you bring it home. I mean, this is something that's going to be consumed normally in less than a week. So it's got that connotation of really fresh beer. It's also got a good green theme, if you will, around it, because if you think about a stack of beer bottles taller than me that it takes to fill from a keg, all you're left with for waste from growlers is about 30 caps, and that's it. So it's got a great movement for that. I think also I've been a lover of beer for many years, and I've seen a lot of fun stuff hitting the bars. The problem is if there's something that's really fun, let's just say Surly has something called Moe's Bender, only available in kegs. If you go to a liquor store to buy it to bring it home, most likely a consumer isn't going to buy an entire keg and bring it home. So that consumer is forced to go to the bar, have a couple there if that's what they want, and go home. They have no way of bringing that Moe's Bender home to enjoy in a home setting. This would allow something like that to happen. There is some restrictions on the bill. There is a clause in there that it's only product that's available in kegs, not in cans or bottles within the state. I know you're going to hear some arguments there tonight. I have done some research. I have found some products. It won't be easy to find a lot of products that's not available in cans or bottles, but it is able. I've identified several, and it's not... The bill isn't meant to be something that we're going to put special export and old style in growlers. It's just not something the consumer is going to drive. They're looking for the rare, fun, special beers to do in a program like this. So I'll turn it over to Jennifer.
Before we turn it over to Jennifer, any questions for Mr. Agnes from members of the committee? Seeing none, Jennifer, you'd like to identify yourself for the record and begin with your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Shones. Thank you, Chairman and representatives. My family owns Zips Liquor Store. We've been there 53 years. This idea came about when the craft brewery was growing, and we get these lists of European kegs also, and they're like $300 or more, and we're like, how do we get those to the public? And that's sort of where our store started to grow with the idea of how do you get these products that are so specialized that no one would buy a $300 keg. So we were brainstorming that way. So it's just another way to access quality products. And being in the Seward neighborhood, we are very green, and they would love to refill, reuse, reduce. And they are very excited about anything that can be reused or organic and exciting.
Thank you. And you said your last name rather quickly. I just want to make sure I have it.
Schoenzeit.
Could you also spell that for the record, please?
S-C-H-O-E-N-Z-E-I-T.
Thank you. Questions for the witness or the testifier? Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not sure which testifier could help, but I was curious what the experience is in other states. Is this allowed in retail liquor stores in other states? And
Mr. Chair, Representative Stensrud, yes, it is. I can't tell you how many, but it is allowed in other states. As we've sort of discussed over, I've always discussed in front of this committee, every state has very different laws. This is something that is allowed in other states and seems to have worked. We just have to figure out how to make it work in our state. Anything new that comes to the state, the different agencies that would look at it have some interest. All of the other entities and participants and stakeholders in the process have got questions and ideas. So,
Representative Stensrud?
Thank you.
Okay. Any else questions for the three testifiers that are before us? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to, I guess, to throw it out to any of the testifiers that want to answer, it's kind of a variety of things. But it sounds like you all are still talking and the various folks in the industry are talking about this. And so I'm assuming some of those conversations are, because we have a lot of regulations currently in law about how many barrels can you produce to have certain avenues of distribution and that available to you. Are those some of the things you're talking about as part of this? And I mean, right now it's as you have it drafted, it's just if you are only producing the beer in kegs and barrels. Is there any size limit on those types of brewers as well to be able to do this?
Mr. Magnoli.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, no, there's no size limit.
Okay. And the other question, thank you, I have is maybe for Ms. Schoenzeit, is from the liquor store standpoint, is this, as you think about, you're busy enough customers coming in, I mean, would you be adding someone on, or would you be able to kind of fill some of these growlers at the beginning of, before a busy shift, or is this only somebody comes in and brings their growler in, and then you've got to leave the cash register to go fill it? And
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, it would probably be something we'd only do 3 days a week for 2-3 hour periods. It would be a consistent thing. It'd also be on availability of what comes in, what we would tap. It would not be, not 100% sure, but probably not from open to close 6 days a week. It would be a certain time thing. We'd have a designated person. It would be as fresh as possible. We would not do it before.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to follow up with you, it sounds to me like this would be maybe be something where you would be specifically marketing this to your customers and that who you know are craft beer lovers and they're looking for this. You know, they'd be on some kind of an email list or something for you to know, this is the, we've got this in and it'll be available these certain times. Am I reading this correctly?
Mr. Agnes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, I'll jump in. I foresee this as something that's limited to, we'd probably just start with one day a week and have Growler Thursdays with a few kegs. We'd probably pour off the majority of the growlers right off the bat, so it wouldn't be something as a customer would come in that we'd go fill their growler. It would be done in a clean, sanitized one, and it would be a trade-off of growlers. So the focus of it would be done in a particular time, manner, so as to speak.
Representative Loon.
Thank you. And just one other question. I don't know if others were going to testify on this or not, but, I mean, would you, if you're the brewer, would you be able to bring the kegs to the liquor store, or does someone else have to pick them up from the brewery and deliver them? Is that...
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, under the current laws, which we're not proposing to change at all, there is a place, over 25,000 barrels, wholesalers distributed, under 25,000 barrels, the manufacturer can elect to transport it themselves or to employ or to hire a wholesaler. So it would be either of those ideas.
Representative Loon.
Thank you. So that would continue to be the case with this change in the law as well?
Correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the three witnesses or testifiers? If not, is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify for or against the bill this evening? Anyone wishing to testify for or against? Oh, looks like we have someone. If you'll come down and welcome to the committee and ask you to identify yourself for the record and spell your last name for us so we make sure that we get it correctly, and then proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Jason Alvey. Last name is A-L-V-E-Y. I'm the owner of the Four Firkins, which is a specialty beer store. We're an off-sale package store, but we only sell beer. You know, in general, I'm for the concept of selling growlers. I want to be able to fill and sell growlers in my store. It's the freshest beer you can get, and we've seen in other states, we've seen situations where we have growler-only stores, essentially liquor stores that sell, fill and sell nothing but growlers. It is a highly desirable product. Our customers tell us all the time they would love this, and we want to make it happen. Now, I'm not necessarily against this bill. I do have one issue with the language, and that is that we would be limited to selling beers that are not otherwise packaged. And we did some research, and that really does limit our options. Now, Tom mentioned sanitizing before. For us to actually sanitize growlers, we would have to spend thousands of dollars to get the proper cleaning equipment, to purchase the equipment and have it installed. And to make that expense worthwhile, we want to be able to sell more than four or five different kinds of beer as they come along. I feel we need to open it up and have more options on the table. So that's where I'm at with that. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Avery. Any questions? And as Representative Hoppe said, this is a bill that does need some additional work, so I know he appreciates your comments, and we'll take those under advisement. Any other questions from members? Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's kind of an intriguing concept, due to Minnesota. Wouldn't there, you talked about, you know, getting a sterilization equipment, and so you could do that. Would that be a requirement, or would there be no other way? Could you outsource that? I would think there'd be companies maybe who could do that. You just trade in stock.
Mr. Elvey.
Chairman, Mr. Stenser. Is it? Yes, sir. You know, I would like to keep that in control. I've heard people talking about outsourcing it. I imagine that once you start doing stuff like this, you know, we're an off-sale liquor store. We currently hold what's called a low-level food license. We're monitored by the city municipal health department. As soon as we start repackaging stuff, I imagine they would increase or ask us or want to increase the level of food license that we have. And I'm sure that any cleaning equipment or anything to do with that process that we do is going to be monitored on a city level. I'm not sure what the city would think of us outsourcing that. I don't know. But me personally, I would like to have it in-house. I wouldn't like to have a third party doing that. I'd like to know it's done properly and done by us.
Representative Stensrud, follow-up. All right. Any other questions by the committee for Mr. Alvey? If not, thank you, sir, for your testimony. Anyone else wishing to speak for or against the bill this evening? Anyone else wishing to speak for or against? Seeing none, we will be laying over House File 2342 for possible inclusion in the liquor bill. There is no other business before the committee, but I do want to thank everyone for their patience this evening, as we did have the reason for our meeting this evening was the passing of Senator Kubley, and today was his funeral, so I do appreciate everyone's participation and patience in meeting with us this evening. If no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.